Thank you very much. Delightful to be here. Genuinely delightful to be here, not taking part in the slam. Because a slam, essentially comparing two poets is like comparing a piece of cheese with a piece of string. It's almost impossible, but it's good fun. Good fun for all yous in the audience, except the people taking part, because they won't understand a word. They're not listening now. I could be speaking Estonian. That's what it sounds like to them. They're just a little sweaty mess. Their palms are all sweaty. They have no idea what they're whizzing around in there. I'm all white noise at the moment. They're just thinking, which poem shall I do? Which poem? Which one? I should do that one. No, I'll tell you what. I'll save that for a later round. Oh, is that presumptuous? So it's a nightmare for them, but you're the audience are here to support them and make it a great evening for everyone. There you go.
Thank you, Elvis. Those are the first words that you've spoken as a slam host here in Ledbury.
Yeah, there
and they
you
were
go.
Really good, weren't they? Okay, right. Now, what's going to happen next is I'm going to be reading out the rules for the 14th Ledbury Slam. So, slammers, pin back your ears. The slam will be held over three rounds, comprising four heats, a semi-final and final. The winner of each heat and the two highest scoring runners-up will qualify for the semi-final. The two highest scoring poets in the semi-final will compete head-to-head in the final. A strict time limit of 3 minutes will be allocated to each poet in each round. Now, this includes any time the poet spends saying hello or talking about the piece to be performed. Elvis, what happens to them if they go over? Oh, God. Yeah. I forgot to say, that is actually a professional mountain rescue whistle. Yeah, it is pretty loud. Right. At each stage of the slam, the order of performance will be determined by a random draw of the poet's names. Your name is in there. Each poet must perform a different piece or pieces of his or her own poetry in each round. Now, judges have been appointed by the referees, and the referees are myself and Elvis. They will give marks for the quality of the writing of the poetry, the quality of the performance of the poetry, and the warmth of the audience response. Very good, excellent, right. If there is a tie-break situation involving poets obtaining equal scores, the referees will use an extremely devious system to determine the winner. God, it's so professional, isn't it? The decision of the judges is final, but the decision of the referees is even more final. God, I love that rule. And finally, fabulous prizes. That's a massive bottle of vodka. Right. Fabulous prizes with a capital FP will be awarded to the winner and runners-up. And these will be given out to, now I'm going to read what it says on this card. Orgiastically ecstatic scenes of cheering. Ledbury, orgiastically ecstatic scenes. Come on, think back. Remember those times and cheer. Yay! Whooping. Clapping. Stamping. Whistling. Oh, my God, it's so orgiastically ecstatic. Ah, right, now, here's one here that shouldn't make any noise, but it's nice for the poets, is winking. That's good, nice little eyeballs there. Kissing. Oh, that's lovely, lovely. Oh, right, now, this is one I saw for I didn't go to Glastonbury this year, but I did see it on the TV, and people doing that, hearting. Oh, yes, all those other people that were sat in their living room and not squatting over a trench or something. Right, hearting. And finally, let's have it from here. Mexican waves, ladies and gentlemen, let's go. Woo! Right the way along, and right the way back again, and back again, and back again, and back again, and back again. God, blimey. Ladies and gentlemen, you are hot.
But Sarah Jane mentioned the judges there. They're scattered throughout the audience. There's three sets of two judges, two for performance, two for writing, and two to judge the audience reaction. Could you welcome? They're going to sit there to watch yous. Welcome to the stage, Martin and Molly. Very bright lights there. Now, your job is to sway them. If you hear something you really like, I want you to show it. I want them to know that that's just been something sensational. We're going to have a quick run through here, a wee test run. You've just heard the most amazing poem. It was moving. It was profound. It was funny. It was everything. It ran the whole gamut of emotions from A to Z. You've never heard anything like it in your entire life. You absolutely loved it. I want to hear what you're going to do after you've heard that poem on a count of three. One, two, three! That's not half bad, actually. I reckon we can go a wee bit further. That's the kind of reaction I'd expect if you'd heard a man in his underpants playing Lady Gaga, his poker face on a kazoo in The X Factor. But I want to hear the reaction. You've just seen Pudsey the dancing Doug. No, you've seen Matisse and the stunt double. They've done a high wire act there, and he's read a poem at the same time. It's been quite astonishing. On the count of three, take the roof off. One, two, three. That sounds good to me. I reckon we're good to go.
We are. Right. So, what's going to happen is Elvis is going to come amongst you with his hat and
that's
pick
technically,
out...
I'd like to point out that's not actually my hat.
Yeah.
Just for sartorial reasons. What a clash that would be.
And you need to pick out four names. Elvis, off you go. Bit of light music, please, David. Thank you very much, David. Right, okay, let's kick off. This is Heat 1 in the 14th Ledbury Poetry Slam. The first poet that you're going to see this evening is Brenda Reed Brown. Here we are in Ledbury on a summer evening with a wonderful array of poets to look forward to. What could possibly spoil that? Here's Brenda Reed Brown. First poet, a round of applause, Brenda Reed Brown.
A while ago, I fell from grace, which is the name I give my ladder now. I thought I could rely on her. Together we'd rise higher and higher, but I was wrong. The capricious cow turned into a two-faced liar, and like those lovers who desert you but swear they never meant to hurt you, slipped accidentally on mossy paving stones, pulled the rung out from under my feet and dumped me, none too gently, and as we parted, left me not broken-hearted but with a shattered heel bone. The smooth promontory of my calcaneum, proper medical term, being pressed, had become an archipelago, or so the x-ray seemed to show, with clear black channels between each chalky isle. This'll take a while to mend, they said, as I lay on the hospital bed. 6 weeks in plaster, six in a contraption, and then you'll have to learn to walk again, which was a bit of a disaster, and put a stop to the poet's rapture I'd felt when I learned that this is called a lover's fracture, traditionally sustained by people leaping from high windows to avoid capture by their paramours, husbands or wives. They'd rather risk their lives than be caught in the act. And I'd like to claim that this was my story, but it is a disappointing fact that I missed out on the good bits and the glory. I just fell. I had torn ligaments as well, and I suffered mild concussion too, confused, I do things I'd already done. And I suffered mild concussion too, confused, I do things I'd already done. But the worst bump in this tumbling percussion thumped my bum, which, after my poor foot struck stone, landed on the ladder, which was by now prone, or possibly supine, it's hard to tell with ladders, so that between aluminium and pelvic bone was crushed muscle, which is not, as you might think, a Swedish heavy metal band, or a belittled bivalve, or something dished up by Heston Blumenthal. This blooming fall left me unable to sit or lie or stand without a very literal pain in the arse. It's been a year now and may never pass. True, it's given me a vague idea of what it must be like to wake each morning with the fear of aches that stretch to the horizon, punctuated by telegraph poles of immobility. Though I've had just a few short months of trivial disability, I won't forget what I've learned. But my mind was full of my own concerns when a friend said, "Hasn't it made you grateful you're usually so fit?" "No, not a bit. Never mind the inconvenience and pain. I am not the same. I've always hated it when people said, 'Take care.' I started a campaign to say instead, 'Take risks.' I've never turned a hair at danger. Got my kicks jumping out of aeroplanes. I was someone who dared. But now I think I'm scared. Perhaps that fearless woman I once was just isn't there anymore. It's hard to pick up courage when you've been dumped in the dirt. But I want to be what I was before. And though I'll never touch Grace again, the treacherous little flirt, I know I must find another ladder and climb like I've never been hurt." Thank you.
Poet number two in Heat One in the Slam this evening is Catherine Crosswell. Catherine only got back from a hen do a few hours ago. She'll certainly have been incredibly sensible. So whooping and sudden loud noises will be absolutely fine. Let's welcome her on stage. Here she is. It's Catherine Crosswell.
Hello. This poem is about those functions that you go to with a partner that are compulsory. "I've been briefed. I'm having a fabulous time. Everything's fantastic, particularly my tummy-hugging knicker elastic. Do you hunt? 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 I was asked at this executive dinner by the person sat next to the thinner, Michael Winner. Fortunately, or unfortunately, Xena the warrior princess popped by to help me out. Brain to mouth connected, and shite, it did soon spout. I don't quite suit the furry thong, a matching bikini bra set. It's the pale skin and glasses, it's quite a pain in the arse it is, and the pointy spear's a bit too heavy, and I find that red meat doesn't really agree with me, or pasta for that matter. So spaghetti bolognese, well, that's the ultimate platter disaster. So no, I don't hunt. I forage for borage and brambles and sloes. I'm a bit like a hoarder, a hairy one of tat. I cram things into small spaces and spend a lot of time rummaging through that. No, what do you do now? Oh, now. I work from the outside in with all my cutlery galore, and I mustn't talk to you about the company war. Let's change the subject quickly and talk about golf. Golf, golf. Nick Faldo, Telly Savalas, Rolf. Not that one. Rolf from the Muppets. Everyone likes a Muppet. Don't mention the Flumps, though, because I can't remember the tune. That's not it. That's not it either. That's it. Pull yourself together, Catherine! You're a lady of lunch who leisures, who doesn't give a hunch for those who homekeep for pleasure. Oh, phew! My husband has returned from the toilette. I can be manically silent and grin and engage the Stafford wife that resides within. It was very nice to meet you. Thank you.
Poet number three in Heat One, the penultimate poet in this first heat, is Caroline Ferguson. After singing the Brahms Requiem, this is a doddle. Right, let's get her on stage immediately. Here she is, Caroline Ferguson.
Now, this isn't going to be Brahms. This is called the Jihadi Blues. I got the Jihadi Blues. My suicide bomb, it didn't make the evening news. Jihadi John, his accent was strong. His identity was unveiled. Under the ISIS flag, his cruelty he did brag. Western ideology was nailed. Bugs Bunny we drew. Charlie Hebdo we slew. Cartoons are out of fashion. Tom and Jerry, the French Aunt Mary. Anarchy is our passion. Civil war. What is it for? Absolutely nothing. If you're a Shia, you ain't got no fear. The Sunnis are no longer strutting. Never mind the West. Allah is best. Violence be praised. Smash the past. The desert is vast. Kafirs will be erased. Off with his head. Praise Allah instead. We march to a different tune. Je suis jihadi. Je ne suis pas un badi. Don't call me a bloodthirsty loon. Ah, I got the jihadi blues. My suicide bomb. It didn't make the evening news.
Thank you. Merci.
And now, poet number four in Heat One is Lucienne Kim Flavel. Published The Big Issue, writing magazine, Muslexia. Awards, the Poetry Box International Competition, the Poetry Pulse Annual Competition. Shortlisted, the Virginia Warby Prize, Aesthetica Creative Writing Competition, and the Bridport Prize. Let's welcome her to Ledbury Slam. Here she is, Lucienne Kim Flavel.
Thank you. This first poem is about yearning. I wrote it when I broke up with my last boyfriend, and I really wanted him back, and it's called Howl. I want you to feel the insufferable loss of me. I want you to feel as though you're unable to function without me. I want your body to quake and quiver with the fantasy of me. I want you to sweat and howl, to run in wind and hail, through bracken, branches and stinging nettles, and find me in a queue at Tesco's, and tell me those awesome words. The next poem I wrote was inspired after a conversation I had with my dad. He said something that shocked me. He said if I continued to eat the amount of chocolate I was, then I would die by the time I was 40. Afterward was the result of that conversation, and my tutor at the time, Hugo Williams, who was a tutor of mine at Manock Moor for the Arvon poetry course, advised that I should send this off, and that sort of started my writing passion, as it were. So afterward. They had to knock out a wall before they could winch me onto the back of a lorry. My neighbours came to watch. I hadn't left the house in years. They fastened me inside an industrial freezer. Then began the chore of constructing my coffin, a glamorised shed. Men hollowed a corner of a field. My parents looked at the crumbled soil and remembered the woman within. Thank you.
Right, Elvis will come around you again to get the next four people in heat two. I will also come amongst you to get the judges' mark sheets. David, bit of light music, please. Thank you.
Round two will comprise. First up will be Jim Denning, followed by Heather Wastey, followed by Peter Whitten, followed by Miles Deacon. Are we ready to kick off this round, sir Jim? First up, then, please welcome to the stage Jim Denning. Oh, no, you're going to introduce them, aren't you?
I am.
I was getting
Thank
ahead
you very
of myself
much,
here.
Elvis. Ooh.
Nearly didn't have an introduction.
Right. First poet in the second heat of the 14th Ledbury Poetry Slam is Jim Denning. Jim Denning is a quiet, studious, respectable person. He has read at the Ledbury Poetry Festival and composed takeaway poems for passers-by. He performs his lyrics with the band Poxy Moron. Let's give him a round of applause. Here he is, first poet, second heat. It's Jim Denning.
I went to the doctor the other day. He said, you're in a terrible way. We'll take a test and scan your blood. Odds are your blood's no bloody good. He says, you may not give a fig, but all your corpuscles are too big. We'll test again, in case things turn out for the worst, and in case you happen to burst. Next day, he says, the news is soothing. You've got nothing needs removing. Your old mum would be approving. Your blood's abnormal, but improving. That's it, abnormal, but improving. The woman before me in the queue, she said, I got a problem worse than you. I shouldn't, but I can divulge. I've got a most responsive bulge. We love you, women, love your bulges. They surround us and indulge us. It's not peculiar, we're just proving. We're all abnormal. But improving. That's it. We're all abnormal, but improving. Now, you fellas, restless and distressed, you want to get it off her chest? Or need a laying on of hands to soothe the case of swollen glands? Well, don't worry, ladies, it soon passes. Your men end up with sticks and glasses. Meanwhile, there's no disproving. You're all abnormal, but improving. I went back to the doc. The doc, he said, my friend, you should have stayed in bed because recent tests have shown you're dead. No, doc, I said, you've lost the thread. I'm just abnormal, but improving. Yeah. So, in a few minutes, let's have a drink and do some grooving, because you're all abnormal, but improving.
Poet number two in heat two of the slam this evening is Heather Wastey. Heather Wastey is the current poet laureate for Worcestershire. Her first commissioned poem was, and I quote, to give a leg up to ex-bats. She won't be performing it tonight. Let's welcome her on stage. Here she comes. She's Heather Wastey.
Thank you. My poem is a rant, and it's for busy people. It's for busy writers, particularly those who have suffered at the hands of editors. And it's for anybody who thinks that words are undervalued and overused. It's called Too Busy for Words. Too busy for words. It goes without saying, I haven't got time for bleating or braying. A lucrative life is all I desire, and these are the only words I require. Too busy for words, so don't interrupt me with erudite sentences. Don't know time for subtlety. Keep it concise on a need-to-know basis. And what would be nice is single-word phrases. Too busy for words of more than two syllables. Don't give me epics, sagas or parables. Pixels on screen or scribbles on paper are chucked in the bin for never, not later. Too busy for words, no time to communicate. Stop all the clocks, I think I might suffocate. Words on the telly, words on the phone are driving me crazy, just leave me alone. Too busy for words, bombarding my earosphere. On the computer I cut and they disappear. Wish I could do the same with your voice, but here in the office I haven't much choice. Too busy for words, so often misquoted. And if you omit some, it's not what I wrote. If you move them about, you screw up the meaning. You edit to death and don't hear me complaining. Too busy for words. Not spoken but hinted, the words I would use will never be printed. Too busy for words, it goes without saying that words should be precious to someone who's paying. Too busy for words, I only want letters. R-U-O-K-L-O-L-X would be better. Or just make it colon dash bracket, that's fine. Don't make it much longer, I haven't got time. Too busy for words, I'd rather be silent. So don't try to chat, I might become violent. My eyes are full up, my ears are congested. I'm shutting them off so my brain's not infested. I give up on words, they only cause trouble. I'll stay self-contained in my language-proof bubble that words cannot penetrate, try as they might. And the words I've just spoken? Well, they're copyright.
Poet number three in Heat Two, penultimate poet in this heat, is Peter Whitton. The man of whom the poet laureate once said, who? Let's welcome him on stage. Here he is, Peter Whitton.
This is a list poem written originally for a Radio 4 slam in the days when the Beeb was keen on dialect and the amazing number of words and phrases used to describe a single subject, but Auntie took fright at my choice of subject, which was the organs of pleasure. He has the wedding gear, the mutton spear, the Hampton wick, the pogo stick, the cool blimey, the old slimy, the love truncheon, the ladies' luncheon, the red-hot poker, the one-eyed joker, the bald-headed cherry plucker, the blue-veined custard chucker, the lecherous stretcher, the beaver cleaver, the riddle-me-ree, the best leg of three, the stiff elver, the long-dong silver, the Rogerous todger, the temporary lodger, the arousing, carousing trouser-mouser. She's got the beauty spot, the flower pot, the gape over the garter, the Pearl Harbor, the butter boat, King Arthur's moat, the parsley patch, the vole catcher, the gristle gripper, the wick dipper, my old cocker's dinner locker, the safe deposit, Blackbeard's closet, the rocket pocket, the serpent socket, moaning myrtle's snapping turtle, the highly boisterous roisterer's oyster in old Mother Hubbard's corner cupboard. Together they're working up a lather, playing mother and father, dancing the blanket hornpipe to the tune of the wheezing bagpipe, playing the time-honoured Olympian sport of bashing the balls round the aphrodisiacal tennis court, up to their nuts and guts, riding the baloney pony specialist interest, prizing open the bearded clam, breaching the walls of the dam, having a roll on the bush patrol, stabbing the main vein, plumbing the domestic drain, sinking the sausage, sucking the lossage, parallel parking in the dark, rocking Noah in the ark, lying on the lovely life raft, leading the llama to the lift shaft, groping for trout in a peculiar river, and that's from Shakespeare's Measure for Measure. Welcome aboard the word boat Venus, finding alternatives to vag and penis. Long may lovers, old and young, have intercourse using the English tongue. Good night.
Poet number four, in heat two of the 14th Ledbury Poetry Slam this evening, is Miles Deacon. Miles will read the perfect poem, moving, inspired, high class. But maybe not today, because he's tired and can't be asked. Well, let's welcome him on stage anyway. Here he is, Miles Deacon.
Hello. It's first time in Ledbury, so the standard is high-ish. Right, okay. All right. You say this is decaf, but I'm pretty sure it's not. By the way at which I'm talking, and my ears are searing hot, and the speed at which I hoovered and cleaned the loo and sink, you say this is decaf, but that's not what I think. I think you slip me caffeine. I think you think it's fun. You love it when I'm manic because I get things done. I've done the weekly chopping. I checked the kid for lice. I've fed and wormed the cat. In fact, I've wormed it twice. I must be caffeinated. I can't stop pacing. I wound and agitated. My heart beats racing like a gerbil on speed, like Bradley Wiggins on a bike. Like any other simile, like a caffeinated husband who's dosed up on a stimulant, who thinks his bloody cardiac arrest is bloody imminent, and can't sit still and take a breath. Can't sit down and take a rest, because guess what I've got in my bloodstream? No, it's not decaf. It's caffeine, and I'm not going to get to sleep tonight. In the morning, I'm going to feel as shite as our poor bloody cat who's now doing something gruesome on the kitchen mat. Ooh. That's your fault, that is. That's what you get when you caffeinate a husband. You get a squitty pet. And no, it's not funny. The poor thing looks ashamed. He's giving me the evil eye. Like I'm the one to blame. Blame her. She did it. Don't blame me. I'm just a husband on full-strength coffee. And now I feel the urge to put new sealant round a bath. Don't tell me that's from decaf. That's a flipping laugh. Thank you very much.
Music, David. We're coming around to get the next few names and judges' marks. Talk amongst yourselves.
Round three will be first up Holly Pullum, followed by Nick Alexander, followed by Al Brunker, followed by Lena Batchelor.
Now, before we come on to this heat three, I'm going to read out the marks for heat one. In order of performance, they are as follows. Brenda Reed-Brown, 253 points. Catherine Crosswell, 231 points. Caroline Ferguson, 197 points. And Lucienne Kim Favell, 197 points. The winner of Heat 1 was Brenda Reed-Brown. Okay, we come on to Heat 3 in the Slam in the first round, and the first poet up now is Holly Pullum. Finding poetic inspiration in daily life can be hard for some. But when you've been mute, paralysed, and generally confused, It comes in bucket loads. Poems about the positive outcomes. Let's give her a round of applause, please, as she comes onto the stage. It's Holly Pullum.
Hello. This poem is about the paralysis. It's called Plans of a Tetraplegic, and it did happen. Tell me what you plan to do with your one wild and precious life, asks the poet Mary Oliver from the whites of her pages. And at the time, I answer her this. Skiing, hiking, dancing, singing, thinking about what the next day is bringing, bathing, bathing, laughter, fun, thinking about trying to find my one, riding harder, riding fast, kicking up dust there in my past, jumping, climbing, letting go, falling, crashing, snap. Crashing? Did I plan this? Oh, no. Neck brace, morphine, tears of fear, but something inside me, it's happy to be here. It doesn't make sense. This surge of relief, a crushed spinal cord, should just mean grief. Something has gone wrong between the letting and the go. And that wild side of me, I think she was in the know. What did she plan? What did she want to feel? To cut through the white noise, feel something more real, more adrenaline, more rush, more push in the book. I cornered my wild side and she had nowhere else to look. So she killed herself, extinguished her own flame, and taken to the grave, luckily, all that guilt and all that blame. So now the wild side's out the way and I'm left with my now one precious life. I can't lift a fork, a spoon or a knife. I can't feel my body, my bones and my skin, and the weight of them all is just crushing me in. I can't move a muscle, just those in my face, and I can't sleep because of the noise, beep, 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 in this place. There's no point crying because the tears will just pool in my ear. I can't feel my front and I can't feel my rear. I can't think about the future. Hell, I'm not going to think about my past. So I find myself in a place, and it's here, here, where I think I'm meant to be. I'm here at last. And here in these months, staring up at that same white ceiling tile, I feel like I've not felt in a really long while. This weight, it lifts, and there is an inner release. Because pinned down by these metal bolts and limp flesh, I find peace. So I'll tell you what I plan to do with my once wild and now precious life. The only thing I can do, because I can't run away, that there's no doubt. I'm just going to breathe in. And breathe out. Thank you.
Poet number two in heat three, the penultimate heat in this first round, is Nick Alexander. Nick Alexander has played with his words ever since he learned to use his daydreams as an antidote to the unwelcome intrusions of authority. He lives and laughs in Ledbury. Would you welcome him on stage? Here he is, Nick Alexander.
A chocolate western. Montelimar and Pa, wafer-backed, well-wrapped, and in the nougat. Try hard to earn an honest slice of cake, to pass on the bonbon, the bourgeois Belgian baubles, to their milky bar kid, who dawdles at the saloon bar door, peering in. Pauline Praline tends to lean too far, displaying herself for the best in crushed velvet dress and no vest, the face of the last chance bar. It's where the kid goes at night to be milked white, whipped up by his angel delight. Yes, every night, The kid is propping up that chocolate bar. Addicted to those treats. Mmm. And mmm. He sighs between her cream of strawberry thighs and stretches out to orange cup her tantalizing hazelnut. Thus in sticky joy, this milky boy became a man. In a walnut whirl of licking lips and sweetened tongues, in a blur of chocolate chips, with that heady aero in his lungs, he'd been to Brazil and back, the toughest nut to crack. One night, quite late, certainly after 8, Montelimar crashed through the saloon door. Where is my darling boy in this dreadful place astray that has been led from the straitened Milky Way? Pauline looked up from the bar. Why, there's a man upstairs who tasted lovely. He shed his kit, cat's been fed, and now he's in recovery. He was your shy boy once, I'll bet. But I know him, rampant and noisette. Montelimar could take no more. You've corrupted him, you coffee-creaming whore! She grabbed at Pauline's dress, which tore and fell to the floor. How charming is the box when first revealed, the swells and swirls and cherry tips that lie concealed. Montelimar was consumed by rage, impotent. Pauline stood full-flavoured, triumphant. They mumbled, who looked, till able to speak. Then all agreed she had that quality streak.
Poet number 3, penultimate poet in the penultimate heat, is Al Brunker. In his own mind, Al stands for absolute legend. But his kids call him a loser because he's always late. Someone called him an amnesiac lowlife once, but he can't remember who. Let's welcome him on stage. Hopefully you can remember it up here. It is Al Brunker. Here he is.
I work in an office. It's not a happy place, I have to admit. It's a grind. The words life's a shit spring to mind. It's etched on everyone's face, the wretchedness of the place. This machine of routine, the celebration of sorrow. We stick it today because we'll be out by tomorrow. But tomorrow never arrives. This place is consuming our lives, cocooned in our suits by Moss Bros and Boots by Next and M&S ties around the necks of double cuff shirts by Charles Thwert, or however you pronounce his name. We call it our fashion prophylactic. Dressing up's just our tactic to protect the prisoner within, the artist, the writer, the poem reciter. Yeah? The person we wish that we'd been. The F1 driver, the Olympic diver. Nah, our lot is to rot as a drab 9-to-5er. Lunchtime is the oasis in our desertified day. We check out the places to fritter away our hard-earned dough. Off we go to HMV, where we'll buy a CD that we'll listen to once or twice maybe, and Robert Dias will ply us with packets of screws, a couple of which we'll eventually use on those B&Q shelves for all the CDs we've listened to once or twice maybe. And the books, all the books we flicked through and looked at but won't ever read. We walk by a guy outside our block with a Viking clipboard and a five-a-side smock. Can you spare a few moments? Can you spare a few moments? Can you spare a few moments for charity? No worries, okay, you have a nice day. Can you spare a few moments? Can you spare a few moments?
Can you spare a few moments for charity? No worries, okay, you have a nice day. On the vest across his back, the words proclaim in white on black, fighting poverty together. Alone he stands in the shitty weather, as together we fight our way by, offering only indifference. We can't look in his eye. We're afraid if we do, we'll see the guy we once used to be before mediocrity placed a hand upon our shoulder and whispered in our ear, when you're standing here and you're 10 years older, the world still won't be green and at peace. And the kids whose faces and minds are twisted by mental disease, they'll do just fine without your pious meddling. Now get on your bike and keep on pedaling till you're old and grey. And remember, you'll thank me for this one day. So, 10 years on, and we're embittered and hateful. But essentially grateful for HMV, where we'll buy a CD, we'll listen to once or twice, maybe in rubber dyes, we'll ply us with packets of screws, a couple of which we'll eventually use on as B&Q shelves, for all the CDs we listen to once or twice, maybe in the books, all the books we flicked through and looked at but won't ever read. Can you spare a few moments? Can you spare a few moments? Can you spare a few moments for charity?
Poet number 4 in Heat 3 in the first round this evening is Lerna Batchelor. My poetry garden bends literary rules, releases manic thought hamsters running amok inside my head, and grows an outward introspection. A novice in performing poetry, here I am. Let's give her a warm round of applause. Here she comes. It is Lerna Batchelor.
I wrote many years ago, and I find it sad that I feel the sentiment is true today still, the children of war. What happened to those days? The sun shone brightly on. What brought the fiery clouds killing through the air? What made the innocents join in blood gore fair? These are the questions of the children of war. Virgin soil and armed men sacrificed with all. Fire, metal, speech and blood, the cues upon the street. Amidst what was a tiny hut, a little girl cries. These innocents, the children of war, the children of this war grow up to fight and kill their kin. The children of this war just die. What is it all for? The sheeted corpses line the street, queuing for a single grave. A little boy searches for his father, once so brave. Overhead, the battle just rages on and on and on. Killing clouds and murderous rocks move in upon my mind. Alongside, still sleep, the children of war.
Bit of light music, please, David. We're amongst you.
Round 4 will go like thus. First up will be Gren Gaskell, followed by Maggie Doyle, followed by Mike Andrews, followed by Spars.
Okay, before they come up, I'm now going to read out the marks for Heat 2 in order of performance. They are as follows. Jim Denning, 244 points. Heather Wastey, 262 points. Peter Whitten, 268 points. Miles Deacon, 272 points. So, Miles Deacon is the winner of Heat 2. Okay, we move on now. This is Heat 4 in the first round, and the first poet you're going to see now is Gren Gaskell. 13 years ago, I moved to Malvern, where I met and married a wonderful woman who encouraged me to write and has made me the luckiest, the happiest of men. Let's welcome him on stage. Where is he? Gren Gaskell.
Thank you. You wouldn't expect a man my age to remember what he's written, would you? When I came to Malvern, I was married at 18 and widowed when I was 58. Came to Malvern 7 years after and sorted myself out as best I could. I joined the U3A. The very first meeting, I was sitting next to this lovely young woman and we exchanged a few pleasantries and I thought, wow. 2 weeks later, purely accidentally, we met in the library in Malvern. We were both there to enrol for a novel reading group. And that's how we got to know each other. I haven't got time to tell you about our first date. It was a total, absolute disaster. Honestly, I went to the wrong house at the wrong time. That was the street gossip. It was a disaster. And at the end of it, I'm there in a car park, riding around in the rain and dark, trying to find a way out. And she started laughing. So we did see each other quite a bit after that, and I asked her to marry me, and she said, what? She said, we don't know each other. I thought, well, in my case, that might be an advantage, but I tried several times to put it different ways, and in the end, I thought, well, I'll write this poem and see if it makes a difference. And it's called To a Late Last Love. Of course we are afraid. They tell us what we carry now is baggage. And in that bag, they think we keep our rage that somewhere down the way we ditched our triumphs. Well, what about the times when we were brave and faced the doubts and doubters to win through? And what about the courage that we gave to friends and family and our lovers too? Somewhere within that bag, there is the prize we won by standing firm and facing fear. Through long black nights, alone, afraid and cold, when no one cared how close we were to tears. Tucked right inside a corner of that sack is that small pearl of wisdom that you spoke that helped somebody rise up from the rack of guilt and turn their tragedy to joke. Do we need love less now we're growing old? Does laughter jar in heads atop with grey? Are all our values lost or cheaply sold? Shall we sit quiet through our remaining days? Oh no, no, sod them all and sod that silly sack. Let's keep our baggage packed with joy and smile. Let others speak of sacroiliac. This love will take us through our long last mile. Of course we are afraid. We know the pitfalls. Heard the... It's two lines. I'm sorry about it. I do apologize. I'm the first person to... We know the pitfalls, heard the lies, got cheated. But all the time we have now is our own. Keep tight hold, lady, because we shall go out flying. Thank you.
Poet number two in Heat 4 of the Slam this evening is Maggie Doyle. Maggie Doyle was born in 2006. She has aged dramatically. Let's welcome her up, please. Here she is, Maggie Doyle.
Merry widow. I was bereft when he left. Well, you just don't expect to be widowed at 82. For 60 long years, we'd had laughter and tears, brought to an end with the flu. I was sympathetic, but he got pathetic, coughing and wheezing and worse. I rubbed Vic on his chest, bought a new Tesco's vest, and told him to visit the nurse. She took one look at him and then said, "My dear Jim, your pulse beats as fast as maracas. Your breath's getting shorter. We just about caught you. I'm afraid your pacemaker's knackered." It wasn't to be. He died peacefully as the lights flashed and sirens wailed. The paramedics were ace, but they lost this one race. His heart stopped as machinery failed. I won't make a complaint, bitter I ain't, because I'm now fancy free once again. It's a nice Sunday night, the evening's still light, and I'm out on the prowl for men. I'm platinum blonde and have always been fond of men, be they dark or fair. Okay, so I'm older, but that makes me bolder as I entice one or two to me lair. I was ever so glad me incontinence pad fitted so well in me thong. Well, when you're out on the town and you let your hair down, you don't want things to go wrong. Now I have a confession. I've got a concession to the trendiest club, the Cube Square. The guy on the door rubbed his stubbly jaw, said, "The care home's just over there." I ignored his dry wit, cared not a bit that he thought I was in the wrong place. The Ruth are so crude, so arrogant and rude, but he did have a lovely face. The music grew louder. I stood so much prouder, willing a man to my side. I said a few prayers as I peeled off some layers, revealing I'd nothing to hide. I caught his sly glance, prepared for a dance as he weaved his way over the floor. I set out to beguile with my denture-free smile and prepared to show him much more. My style is eclectic. I'm not anorexic. I have a bosom that still draws the eye. But I silently blew it. My chance, I knew it. My victim steered left and walked by. I had to think quick, so I raised my stick, aimed for his ankles and feet. He wobbled and stuttered, garbled and muttered, said something else about heat. No one could see, so I dragged him to me, planning the next thing to do. But if you want to know more about this man on the floor, I'll have to get through to round two.
Poet number three, penultimate poet in this final heat of the first round of Ledbury Poetry Slam number 14. Well done, is Mike Andrews. I'm Mike Andrews. I'm 79 on the 10th of July. I've got 8 grandchildren and no mortgage, and I'm going to win this competition. So there. Welcome on stage. Here he is, Mike Andrews.
3 poems, you'll get the price of one. Pro am. Professional poets are a pain in the arse. They live in a world esoteric. They make up the words and the lines never rhyme, and the subject is often historic. Farming in Galway, a suicide pact, a look into man's inner self, so bloody self-centred they just make me puke. And besides, it's not good for their health. Give me an amateur any old time. All he wants to do is to please. He sticks to the rules, uses words that we know, and bugger the birds and the bees. And yet, who remains at the end of the day?
It's the Heaney, the Plath, and the Hughes. They have something to say which touches us all. So let's keep the professional views. And now, two poems about cancer. A lot of us have been through it, we'll all go through it, etc. Healing powers. A kindly word, a loving look. Those simple gifts were all it took to dispel the grief. A quiet hour, just us alone. A hidden moment to atone and strengthen our belief. We knew that all would be all right. At tunnel's end there was a light. That yes, all would be well. The caring words, the love of friends, the knowledge that all this transcends that evil little cell. So, the hidden strength of healing powers, it makes more precious what we have. Give life and love a golden hue. Yes, all will be well. And if you've been through cancer and you've been down to Cheltenham, you've had your old rays squirted at you, you've joined a rather exclusive club. Join the oncology club. You just need a note from your doc. It meets weekdays in a spacious club room. First meeting's at 8 o'clock. Yes, join the oncology club. It's open to girls and to lads. So, prostate or tit, it don't matter a bit. Aunts, uncles, grands and granddads. So, join the oncology club. The banter is warm and light-hearted. Hello, my dear. How long you been here? To be honest, we've only just started. In the oncology club, the stewards are kindly and caring. Their clothes are so neat, they really are sweet. They obviously care what they're wearing. The oncology club is exclusive, but being a member is free. So make the best of the treatment you get. This is what healthcare should be.
Poet number four, the last poet in this last heat of the first round of the 14th Ledbury Poetry Slam, is Spoz. Spoz's real name is Giovanni Esposito. Spoz was Birmingham's poet laureate, as well as the Green Party's parliamentary candidate for Bromsgrove this year. God, he hasn't done anything yet. He lost his deposit. Shit happens. Let's welcome him on stage. Here he is, Spoz.
My folks are Italian. I was born in Birmingham, which is why I speak like this. To resemble someone of stature or to capture a feature that rouses rapture could be classed as a wonderful thing. Perhaps you're the image of Martin Luther King, or perhaps Gandhi, John Lennon, Kate Bush or Bob Marley. Me? I look a bit like the great Joe Pasquale. But that's okay, because he's a nice guy, so don't try and belittle me, because both Joe and I have an affinity with Italy, and I've been there. That speck of an Italian village where Mum and Dad came from, like that nugget from heaven, and I'm wondering if it's the same one that they left behind. Geez, were Mum and Dad blind? Though I guess things are never quite what they seem, because it's a bitch being the cat that never gets the cream. So it's arrivederci, campagna, and buongiorno, Brum. I'm so glad that Mum and Dad had decided to come to the UK to start a new life in a new way, because if they'd have decided to stay, I could have been herding goats now. With my farming know-how that I would have acquired had their work permits expired, or they'd chosen not to be part of that labour migration that made my Mum and Dad foreigners in this nation. Didn't they know it? So it's hi-ho, hi-ho, it's off to work, there you go. Treat your mardy's a wop, treat a rush, she's a dago. It's tough trying to work and pick up a language when all you want is a panini to make of the sandwich. Then us kids come along and it's school days anew. The Catholic nuns changed our names because Giovanni won't do. We'll call you John. It's much easier to say. It's what the English translation is anyway. You can call him what you like when you're in your own home. But as you Italians say, when in Rome... Now, don't shed a tear, don't pass around the tissues, because I'm wondering if Joe Pasquale had to face the same issues of funny name taunts in his neighbourhood, thanks to Enoch Powell and his rivers of blood. Anyway, Giovanni fades, but John works hard in class, heads down and study, and I hope that I pass my exams. So, what were Mum and Dad's plans? Well, they didn't want me following in their tracks. Long hours, hard labour, sweating blood, breaking their backs. A wecker with... Oh, this would be me Mum talking, by the way, right? I'll try and do the accent. A wecker with you brain, I get the good pay, and I save a bit of money for the rainy day. I get a nicer house, and I get a nicer car, and I don't waste too much of time with the play, the guitar. So that's nearly what I did. And that's really why I'm here, to pay homage to two stalwarts and all I hold dear. The definition of the axis upon which I revolve is down to their courage, their strength and resolve. Thanks.
I'm going to read out the marks for Heat 3 while I'm doing that. Elvis is going to go and get the score sheets for Heat 4. If you could just let him know who you are, judges. Brilliant, thank you. So, marks for Heat 3 in order of performance are as follows. Holly Pullum, 258 points. Nick Alexander, 260 points. Al Brunker, 274 points. Lena Batchelor, 238 points. So the winner of Heat 3 was Al Brunker. Right, I'm now going to add up the marks for Heat 4. While I'm doing that, Elvis is going to have a chat with you.
Hello. I've got to fill in now. I am padding while Sarah Jane's adding. That's not bad. That's not bad. I've got to redeem myself for being the most unpopular man in Ledbury by having the temerity to blow the whistle on Gren there. Yes. So I might do... I tell you what, I've got to do a poem. Do you want an old one or a new one? Yes, yes. Let's do a new one, because this kind of fits with the look on your faces when I blew that whistle. Hang on a minute. Hang on. It's in here. So these are really new. They're not even in the book, so just done this. Election recently, didn't we? We had an election and it was all about hardworking families, wasn't it? Hardworking families, hardworking families, hardworking families. And after a while, I just thought, what about the lazy, feckless, drunken, childless poets, eh? I'm disenfranchised here. Where's my better, brighter future, eh? What's my future? I'll tell you what my future probably is. It's probably just dying from neglect in a badly run care home, probably owned by Duncan Bannatyne off of Dragon's Den. So I thought maybe I should embrace the zeitgeist. You know, get with the whole thing that you're meant to be doing, because in the Labour Party election, they're talking about you've got to wrap yourself in the spirit of enterprise, haven't you? You've got to get with it all. So here we go. I've decided to adopt a new approach. This is called No More Mr. Nice Guy. Gonna smear myself in aspiration. The gravy train is in the station. El Dorado's my destination. No more Mr. Nice Guy. Goodbye, Caravan Park in Dundee. Hello, banker, wanker, bourgeoisie. I'm business poet, PLC. No more Mr. Nice Guy. Outsource my sonnets, commodify. Churn out cheap dross and pile it high. Do more advertisements than Stephen Fry. No more Mr. Nice Guy. Flex my corporate muscle, do the hustle. Dance through tax loopholes like Darcy Bustle. Become a brand, and I don't mean Russell. No more Mr. Nice Guy. Incentivize synergy outside the box. Stir fry ideas in marketing walks. Open the kimono, set fire to the socks. No more Mr. Nice Guy. Go global. Go global. Franchise out my doggerel. Elvis multinational McGonagall. Use any shite rhyme that's vaguely probable. No more Mr. Nice Guy. Perfumed in arrogance by Hugo Boss. Hate thy neighbour, don't give a toss. Screw you basic bitches, I'm with Kate Moss. No more Mr. Nice Guy. maximise profit, get my pound of flesh, invest in a sweatshop in Bangladesh, handmade high street haikus, factory fresh. No more Mr. Nice Guy. Hard as nails like Pontius Pilate, kick the competition in the private, sell my granny to Somali pirates. No more Mr. Nice Guy. Fuck the morals, they don't matter. Move the goalpost, bend it like blatter, melt the system. I was so chuffed with that line, I tell you. I thought I'll have to write the whole poem around that. Melt the system and fry it in batter. No more Mr. Nice Guy. Samsung, Citibank, Pepsi, privatized soul. Drink gin with the devil at the 19th hole. Use 24-carat gold toilet roll. No more Mr. Nice Guy. Feel the poor huddled masses' pain. Cry with laughter, weep champagne. Sprinkle my cornflakes with cocaine. No more Mr. Nice Guy. Swarovski crystal yacht, Gucci gear. Look at the size of my chandeliers. On first name terms with Vladimir. No more Mr. Nice Guy. Binge on bloated bling. Feed, spew, feed. Marble vomitorium's what I need. Pinstriped emperor of naked greed. No more Mr. Nice Guy. Just one wafer thin mint waiter, I've got room. Exploding big fat bastard, bang kaboom. Bursting bulge requires gargantuan tomb. No more Mr. Nice Guy.
Thank you very much, Elvis. Right, so marks in Heat 4 in order of performance are as follows. Gren Gaskell, 241 points. Maggie Doyle, 242 points. Mike Andrews, 241 points. Spoz, 272 points. So the winner of Heat 4 was Spoz. So this means that before the interval, I can announce that when you come back for the semi-final, we will have the winner of Heat 1, which was Brenda Reed-Brown. The winner of Heat 2 was Miles Deacon. Winner of Heat 3 was Al Brunker. Winner of Heat 4 was Spoz. And the two highest scoring runners-up, both from Heat 2, Peter Whitten with 268 points and Heather Wastey with 262 points. Enjoy the interval.